with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Okay, well, good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. I am very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and like I said, any other time in between. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you'd like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all run together, Reclaiming Authenticity. And if you would like to be part of the show, I invite you to call in. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And just in case you cannot spend the whole hour with me tonight, you can always download this podcast or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And just for, an FYI, these podcasts are also available for download on Audible and Amazon Music. Well, as I share each and every broadcast that, overall, these shows focus on the integration of spirituality and mental health, all within the context of our relationships, especially, the relationship that we have with ourselves and certainly intrapersonal relationships that we have with others, coworkers, friends, and so forth, and the relationship that we have with God or the divine. It is certainly my great pleasure to be with you here today. So I hope that wherever you are today, that you are doing well, that you are safe, that you are at peace, and that your heart is doing splendid. So welcome to tonight's show, Lasting Changes in Values and Beliefs, the Integration of Near-Death Experiences. And this is a special treat for people who are listening here tonight because I'm going to be taking your calls after the break because I really would like to hear from you if you yourself have ever had a near-death experience, or perhaps a family member or a friend, a coworker, has had a near-death experience. I invite you to call in and share your story, because I will be talking about near-death experiences, as in, what are they? What kind of lasting effect or transformation occurs as a result in people? And what kind of impact do they have on relationships? But also, what are some other obstacles that people face when trying to integrate their near-death experience into everyday life? And you think that a person who's had a near-death experience, who's had a wonderful experience, and the encounters that we often read or so forth, we hear, or maybe we've even experienced, that there wouldn't be any problems trying to integrate that, living that out the rest of your life, so to speak, that it would be a seamless transition, but not so. So I have a few thoughts on that, and just to share with us what are some of the obstacles that people have faced in trying to integrate and make sense as to like what they saw or heard or felt. And now that I have come back to this world, or revived and here I am, now what do I do? How do I live out my life? And to what degree in terms of the quality of life and so forth, and how are my relationships and all that? So, all in all, we are social beings, and it's often within the context of relationships that we have great opportunities to share our stories, whether that be that we've experienced tremendous pain or suffering or wonderful things that have happened to us and we can't wait to tell somebody about it. But we know that, sometimes, just down through history, we read stories or maybe even things that have happened to us, acts of betrayal or cruelty that somebody has afflicted against us, or even vice versa, we may have, inflicted onto others, or sometimes we're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Many people bear the scars of the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual wounds out there. And yet, ironically, just as we've experienced our woundedness in these relationships, it's also within the context of healthy relationships that we can find our healing, our voice, our authenticity. And the difficulty then is often finding that courage to discover and even rediscover that which has always been in you, and near-death experiences and how people share those experiences, those stories, has a distinct place in how do we heal from, our woundedness. Okay, and certainly coming, to an understanding of, as I said, to discover or rediscover that which has always been in us, being aware of our giftedness or the simple graces that we possess or skills, and even our uniqueness that we come into the world with. If you're a follower of this show, you've heard me talk many times about hachetas, Latin for thisness, coined by the Scottish Franciscan John Duns Scotus in the 1300s. It's this thisness, hachetas. It's, not just your fingerprint, but it's more or less your blueprint. In that, two people could be doing the same job or the same task or whatever, but nobody can do it quite like you because it's your thisness. It's that uniqueness that you put in place, or you have a tendency to, do a little extra or put something special on it. And everybody has this uniqueness, a thisness to it, and just it makes our lives unique and very special to one another. And you've also heard me share before that I am just a firm believer that we do come into this world with everything that we need for ourselves and others, but through various experiences, perhaps we didn't think that we had anything special to offer, we've given away parts of ourselves, if not the whole of ourselves, of that uniqueness or that thisness, because perhaps we did not feel as though we could live up to another person's expectation or standards of us, just because our uniqueness or our thisness was different from theirs. And, we didn't realize that, that's our specialness, our uniqueness, just like it was their uniqueness, but we might have felt like we had to be like somebody else. Or maybe we hid our uniqueness from others in order to survive abuse or ridicule or shame or whatever it was, that again, we hid our thisness just because we didn't think it was going to be accepted. Or maybe it wasn't accepted and we thought there was something wrong with us. And perhaps those aspects of ourselves, have been taken away from us, or we didn't have the strength to fight that and hang on to our giftedness. But at any rate, when we become aware that we have done these things, it does take tremendous courage to reclaim who we are, and not, who we once were or whatever. It's who we are, what we have always been, who we have always been. And we can reclaim distinctness, our thisness about ourselves, such as our voice, our uniqueness, our thisness. And when this occurs, certainly we soon discover that we're going to begin to tell our life stories of transformation from a different place in us, a place of healing and wholeness and gratitude and deep appreciation and love and honesty and so forth. And yet, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And that's what reclaiming authenticity is really all about. having then the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And as I'll be talking about in this show is basically about how we tell those stories. Is it going to be from a place of woundedness or disappointment? And depending on how long we've been carrying, a certain brokenness around, we might tell our stories from a deeper place of bitterness. And certainly, as I said, people who have experienced, a near death have quite a story to tell that benefits all of humanity. Well, pretty much a near-death experience is a distinct phenomenon that people sometimes report after a near-death episodes. And these circumstances that surround that include, having a serious illness or an injury, such as from a car accident or a cardiac arrest or military combat or childbirth or a suicide attempt or whatever, whereby the heart stops beating. Okay? It has been reported that, a near-death experience all occurs within, let's say, 1 to or even 30 seconds to 4 to 5 minutes, even longer, of a person's heart stopping and then being resuscitated. And some people, coming back from that have been able to report having sensed various images or sounds, and et cetera, while clinically dead. Well, I know most people out there are familiar. If you're not, this is a good book to read. Most people are familiar with Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life. It's, I think it was originally published back in 1975, but there's been many additions to it. Or perhaps more recently, many people have seen the 2014 movie, Heaven Is For Real. And this is where a young boy had his own near-death experience. And his family went through tremendous difficulty trying to explain their son's experience to others in a small town. Or perhaps you might even read Embraced by the Light by Betty Eady. And there are several other books out there that are dedicated to this subject of near-death experiences. There's hundreds, if not thousands. And some are first-hand accounts. Some are more research-based. But either way, near-death experiences have been gaining public interest over probably well into 50-plus years, and even then some. Okay. Well, in Moody's book, Life After Life, he goes into great detail describing when a near-death experience occurs as a person has medically, as he puts it, crossed the threshold of death, but then is brought back to life, and usually through an intervention of some sort of medical technology, and regains full health. Now, according to Raymond Moody, all near-death experiences contain one or more core elements. And he lists them, one is, some people might experience an out-of-body experience, a feeling of being separated from their body or floating overhead and watching things, watching medical personnel work on their body, trying to resuscitate and so forth. And some people, through their near-death experience, just have this incredible feeling of peace. And some, often report traveling through a tunnel at a very, very rapid speed. Okay? And some report meeting or seeing a deceased relative. And they might see beings of light or historical religious figures. And a lot of people also report a life review, in which the events of one's life are reevaluated, shall we say, in the light of greater understanding. Okay, and these happen very, very quickly, just in a matter of seconds, if not minutes, but you're able to experience all those things all over again, that life review. And I'll say things, I'll say a little bit more about that as we go on here. And a lot of people also report being told to return to life to complete unfinished business. In other words, it's not your time. Go back. And then when they agree to go back, there's a deep feeling of sadness upon leaving that blissful, warmth, unconditional love-filled dimension. Now, Moody's book is not the first time anyone has ever recorded near-death experiences. And since writing his book, there have been many more personal accounts of near-death experiences, simply because we have more life resuscitation devices available to us. In fact, you know, just anywhere you go these days, there seems to be a lot more, you know, AEDs, the automated electronic defibrillators, in public places, you know, like restaurants and theaters and churches and synagogues and malls and department stores. They're there. And if you work, you know, in and around, you know, these public places, you may be required to, you know, go through training, you know, not just CPR training, but also to become certified or, you know, being able to administer the AED if somebody has, you know, a cardiac arrest. Okay? And more people are being trained in CPR. So just by sheer advancement of medical technology, you know, more and more people are being resuscitated after their hearts have stopped. And many people are reporting having these near-death experiences. Okay, but there's actually an ancient account that is told by the philosopher Socrates, which has been written into Plato's Republic, which is somewhere, experts put it somewhere around 600 BCE. And Socrates related the fate of a warrior, as we say, called Er, the son of Arimaeus, who was left for dead on the battlefield, but unexpectedly returned to life at the instant he was placed on his funeral pyre. And Socrates recounts, he said, was once upon a time slain in battle, and when the corpses were taken up on the 10th day, already decayed, Er's body was found intact, and having been brought home at the moment of his funeral, on the 12th day, as he laid upon his funeral pyre, he revived, and after coming to life, related what, he said, he had seen in the world beyond. And said himself that when his soul left his body, he journeyed with a great company of a mysterious region where there were two openings side by side in the earth, through which the souls of the disembodied people either traveled upwards or downwards in space in accordance with the judgment passed on their lives in that place. And then those who were going on to heaven went towards a straight light, like a pillar, mostly, you know, resembling a rainbow, but much brighter and pure. Now, there have been many philosophers and scholars out there who dispute the facts about Ur's existence, or his experience, I should say, as being only an allegory, you know, a fictional story. Yet it offers striking parallels to modern near-death experience accounts that have been reported by millions of people from various cultures, all walks of life, children, middle-aged, you know, teenagers, the elderly, and so forth. And today, modern researchers are really taking a new look at Er's account by Plato. And one such person is professor and psychiatrist Bruce Grayson, and he developed this scale to measure the depth and intensity of an individual's near-death experience that included phenomena such as a sense of being dead, or a sense of having pleasant feelings, a calmness, or an overwhelming sense of unconditional love and forgiveness and peace. Again, an out-of-body experience, sensation of floating above one's body and seeing the surrounding area, or a sensation of moving upwards through a tunnel or a narrow passage, and meeting deceased relatives or spiritual figures, and encountering a being of light, maybe a religious or divine figure, or being engulfed in a warm light, and experiencing their life review. And then reaching a border or a boundary, which, you know, they describe as being attached with a silver cord that you can only go so far. And a feeling of being returned to the body, often accompanied by reluctance or, you know, their choice. And so this near-death experience scale devised by Bruce Grayson, you know, it's just, again, a way to measure just distinct characteristics of people who had near-death experiences and just what have I sensed? What have I seen? What have I heard? What have I experienced? As I said, millions of people all over the world, probably since the beginning of time, have been sharing these stories. Some were written down, some have just been shared, and so forth. Some don't have the context in which to put their story into, and so sometimes it's not always shared. But they do experience, you know, this criteria as marked out by Grayson. Now, not all near-death experiences follow this criterion verbatim. In fact, you know, research has shown that 15% of near-death experiences often report that the passage through a dark tunnel is very frightening. For example, one man's story that I read, you know, he said that I suddenly stopped in this dark tunnel and began to fall down at an enormous speed, you know, just faster and faster and faster, as if I was literally being hurled down vertically, with my head downwards into this black hole. And it was so pitch black, I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. And while I was falling like that, I began to hear screams and shrieks and heart-rending, horrible, horrible laughter and the most revolting stench you can imagine. And then the black environment changed into fire. And there were all sorts of terrible-looking and frightening creatures. And then at that point, the person said that he was resuscitated. He was revived, and he found himself back at the hospital. But still, the majority of near-death experiences report experiencing positive love, you know, loving and pleasant feelings, and just wonderful, wonderful, just being engulfed in warm light and so forth. Now, at this point, I have to add a word of caution. Okay. Many people are drawn to these stories of near-death experiences, either out of curiosity, like, what are they talking about? What do they actually see? Or fascination. And many people, and I can say this for certainty, because I've counseled them, that many people would then conclude that since what people who had near-death experiences reported is beautiful and peaceful and filled with unconditional love, why then stay on this earth any longer? Why not commit suicide and go straight to heaven and live these wonderful experiences for all eternity? Well, that's not a good idea. You know, there's a huge misunderstanding about what near-death experiences are all about, because there have been reports for people who have attempted suicide, and ironically, people who have jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco and who died, but then were resuscitated. And they reported that during their near-death experiences, they were allowed to see and feel the devastating effects their suicide had on their families. They were allowed to see into the future a little bit, and they just realized that, wow, this is not a good thing. And I think for the first time, they also realized how much they were loved and cared for by many, many people. And as a result of this, they had lost any desire to hasten their deaths. In fact, they often did a complete 180-degree turn from being filled with despair and hopelessness to now being filled with love and value and cherished every relationship in their lives. They were so transformed by that, that they were just like, no, I'm going to wait till God calls me, or I'm going to wait until, you know, I die of natural causes or whatever it might be. They just had no desire to hasten their death just because of the ramifications, the impact that their death has and had on their loved ones. So in speaking of 180-degree transformations reported by near-death experiencers, they often report that after being resuscitated and after they, you know, are coming to terms with this and just integrating just what has happened to me and now how do I live, they found that they have experienced lasting changes in their values and beliefs. You know, for example, I have a long list here. You know, for example, near-death experiencers will, you know, talk about appreciating life more fully, that there is no more fear of death. They experience increased feelings of self-worth or self-acceptance, that they have more compassionate, you know, in a sense, just in regard for others. In fact, all of life. They also have developed a heightened ecological sensitivity, that they're not going to throw paper on the ground. They're going to be more sensitive to water and pollution and things like that. Many report becoming anti-materialistic, anti-competitive, that they just like, that's not who I am anymore. I don't see the value in it. There's nothing to gain by gaining all kinds of material things or to be competitive. They just lost that taste for it. And their religious orientation becomes more universalistic, shall we say, inclusive and spiritual in its expression, where they begin to see not just, you know, people who would like to divide themselves into certain groups or denominations or whatever, but they see, you know, a religious or spiritual orientation as very inclusive of all of humanity, regardless of culture, regardless of gender, regardless of language, and so forth. Okay. And some people develop just a thirst, a quest for knowledge that they soak it up like a sponge. And others, excuse me, others sense, you know, have a strong sense of purpose in serving others, and they just want to give back to others. And still, there we go, get rid of that frog. Still, there's others that say, well, I'm convinced of life after death. I'm not just reading about it and I hope there's life after death, but no, I am convinced. I know there is life after death. And the same thing is true of they're convinced of the existence of God or the divine. You know, they may have, before they had their near-death experience, well, I've read lots of things and I hope God exists. But, you know, after the near-death experience, they go to more of a conviction of, I know God is there. I know the divine exists. And some people develop gifts of healing or heightened intuition or even ESP. Okay. Depends. Not everybody, but some. And many people develop unusual sensitivity towards light or sound, or overly sensitive to humidity, and other just stimulation from other just environmental aspects, other environmental characteristics. You know, more people could be more sensitive towards allergies. And there's also a diminished tolerance to alcohol or other pharmaceutical drugs. Again, they just, no, I have no desire to do that. I have no taste for that anymore. And people have also reported huge energy shifts where they have more energy, but yet they often sleep less. Now, another little caveat here. These transformations that people experience following a near-death experience do not necessarily guarantee, as I said at the beginning, a smooth, seamless transition. In fact, there's a study out there, which I'll share after the break, that the average time to adjust to a near-death experience, in other words, integration and coming to terms with it, it runs anywhere from 12 and a half years to 14 years, even up to 42 years in one person's case. So we are just getting started. So I would really love to hear your heart on this matter. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And I hope that you've been enjoying the show so far, the broadcast, and I've been talking about near-death experiences and the lasting changes that occur, the transformation that occurs in people who have had near-death experiences. And I just want to encourage you that if you've been listening and you've had a near-death experience or you know somebody who has, please call in, share your story. You know, because it's always nice to talk to people and give an opportunity for people to just share with others. Because one of the things I have noticed that when, not just on tonight's broadcast, but whenever anybody shares their story of this is what happened to me, or this is where I'm struggling, or whatever it might be, it gives other people permission to talk about their issues, to talk about their stories as well. So again, if you feel led, you know, please call in. Okay. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about the lasting changes and values and beliefs in people who've had a near-death experience. And just want to go through the transformations again, just in case you didn't get them all. But many people who've had near-death experiences who were pronounced clinically dead and then, but you know, they've revived and they report seeing and hearing wonderful things. But as a result, what are some lasting changes that they have seen and experienced in their lives? Things such as they appreciate life more fully, that there's no more fear of death, or they experience increased feelings of self-worth and self-acceptance. And people have more compassion, regard for others, and all of life. They see themselves connected with all life. And others develop a heightened ecological sensitivity. You know, they're not going to pollute. They're going to take care, you know, recycle, and whatever that means for them, and so forth. And many adopt an anti-materialism or anti-competitiveness lifestyle, that those things just no longer matter to them. And their religious orientation becomes more universal. It becomes very inclusive and spiritual in its expression, that there's no, again, no competitiveness in, you know, despite the number of denominations out there and the world religions, you know, the top five world religions out there, they start to see things as more universal, more things having, you know, people have in common. And so they look at humanity, you know, as being more universal in its religious and spiritual expression. And still others have this quest for knowledge. They develop this sense of purpose or serving others, that, okay, if I was sent back for a reason, what is that? What is my purpose now? How can I serve others? I don't want to compete with them. So how can I serve them? How can I help? How can I help alleviate the pain and suffering of others? And people with near-death or having had a near-death experience are convinced of life after death, and they are convinced of the existence of God or the divine. You are not going to change your minds on that because they have witnessed it. And some people even develop gifts of healing, you know, or heightened intuition, or even ESP. And some people develop just an unusual sensitivity towards light or sound or humidity or other things that they experience throughout the day. You know, they might develop, you know, just a heightened sensitivity towards allergies, or even a diminished tolerance to alcohol or other pharmaceutical drugs. You know, they just lose all taste for alcohol, and just the pharmaceutical drugs, like, I'm not going to do that. Okay. And a lot of people report just huge shifts in their energy, you know, where they have more energy and they sleep less, that they don't need to go on, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep. They can probably do with 4 or 5, maybe even 6 or something, but it's certainly noticeable to them. Now, as I mentioned before the break, these transformations do not necessarily guarantee a smooth, seamless transition. As I said, the average time to adjust to a near-death experience was anywhere from 12 and a half, 14 years, even up to 42 years in one person's case. So, what are some aspects or, you know, these challenges faced by people who've had near-death experiences. Well, the authors Stout, Jakim, and Atwater, way back in 2006, they did a study, and they had identified six major challenges that are faced by people who have had near-death experiences. You know, the first one is that, processing a radical shift in reality, you know, where their reality is just totally new. They see things totally new, and it's just radical shift, you know, and just they become just more and more aware of the concept of life and death and afterlife and the body, the mind, the spirit, you know, and they just have a new and vital view of themselves. And some may be challenged by, you know, having accepted the return, and they may have this yearning to return to what they have experienced, even a feeling of homesick. And this is something that was shared with me from many people that I have talked to who've had near-death experiences, that not a day goes by in which they, you know, they want to go home. You know, they're homesick, but yet they're willing to wait because they're now on this search of, now what do I do with my life? But it was such a beautiful, you know, being engulfed in warm white light or golden white light and just feeling unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness and so forth, that they want to return to that. And so even though they're back on earth here, they have a, just this huge desire to, I can't wait to get back there. And some people, you know, are challenged by just sharing the experience, you know, the need to be believed and accepted, as well as to process and understand what happened. You know, they want to share what happened to them with others, but that's not always accepted by coworkers, friends, loved ones, spouses, and so forth. You know, they want to be, you know, accepted. But if you've ever seen the movie with the young boy, let me get back here. There it is. Oops, I thought I had it here. Apologize, folks, for this taking so long. There it is. The 2014 movie, Heaven is for Real, where a young boy had a near-death experience, and his family went through tremendous difficulty trying to explain their son's experience to others in a small town. And they were just met with just huge, huge resistance by churchgoers, of all people, you know, people who you would think believe already, but there was more of a skepticism, you know, around people who just like, well, that's not how I understand it, but, you know, how do you know that the little boy isn't lying? And yet, you know, they just didn't take into consideration how this young boy was changing, how he was being transformed as a result of having this near-death experience, and how he could just witness or share his story with others to promote that kind of, yes, there is an afterlife. You do not have to be afraid of death, and, you know, and so forth. Okay. But his parents faced tremendous scrutiny as a result. And some people, you know, they are challenged by, you know, trying to integrate new spiritual values with earthly experiences, you know, such as the importance of unconditional love and how we treat each other. You know, you've heard me speak about this many times, where just go down through history and you see the, you know, you witness the cruelty that humanity has inflicted on, you know, humanity, pretty much. And somebody who has fully experienced that unconditional love wants to share that with others and live that out with others, but it's not always, well, you know, accepted. And how we treat each other really matters. Well, the fifth major challenge faced by near-death experiences also is adjusting to heightened sensitivities and perhaps even supernatural gifts, like sensitive to strong emotions and negative behaviors. In other words, they can't be in a room where there are strong emotions being shared and negative behaviors, just a lot of negativity. It's like, I can't be around this. I have to leave. I just can't. or heightened intuition, or being more acutely aware of smells or vision or taste or sounds or whatever. Okay, that's take a lot of adjusting too, you know, because now that you have these heightened sensitivities, whereas before, these things didn't bother me. Why now? Well, again, it's a radical shift in that energy, you know, what you have experienced. And, you know, some people with the supernatural gifts, like I said, with heightened intuition and so forth. And lastly, this study had also shown that the last challenge faced by near-death experiencers were certainly finding and living out one's purpose. Not just struggling with why am I being sent back, but the reason for it. It's like, okay, I agreed to come back. I understand it was not my time. But now what do I do? Okay, and I've had several people share with me their own personal struggles because they had just unbelievable, wonderful near-death experience. And they agreed to go back, but because of their accident or because of the trauma that the body experienced, some of them were coming back into a body in which was broken or needed to go through rehab, or they're now wheelchair bound. Or one woman had shared her story with me, she's now a quadriplegic and she's really struggling with, why did I have to come back to be bedridden, and so forth. And so, again, these are questions that people really wrestle with, that they want to know their reason for being sent back, as being told, not now. Well, as I said, you know, having had a near-death experience does not necessarily guarantee this smooth, seamless transition into living out that experience in this world. In fact, there are just many, many more difficulties, you know, that people really struggle with. There's the intrapsychic difficulties that are very common to having had a near-death experience, such as a person may experience ongoing anger or depression related to losing the near-death experience. You know, not the memory, but being sent back. Okay. And I've treated lots of people who have had near-death experiences who, you know, can't understand why they would now need to be on an antidepressant, because, you know, the more the story unfolds, it's this, you know, I had that, and yet I agreed to come back, and I just feel so depressed. Depression is real. And some people have difficulty reconciling the near-death experience with previous religious beliefs or values or lifestyle. Like, where does this, you know, where does my experience fit? You know, what are some things I need to rethink now? You know, what are some things I took for granted? And some people just, they can become overly identified with their near-death experience. Like, that's all they think about. Okay, and even, you know, they have this underlying fear that, you know, they share their near-death experience and everything that they had seen and heard and smelled and so forth, that it might indicate, or they might be perceived as having some sort of mental instability. Okay, and, you know, the interpersonal difficulties, you know, difficulty reconciling changes in attitudes and assumptions and perspectives with the expectations of family members and friends. You know, like I said, not everybody is going to like welcome, you know, a person sharing their story, you know, because a lot of times people, you know, have a curiosity like, well, exactly what did you see? What did you hear? Did you meet Christ? You know, and so forth. Did you meet Buddha or whatever it might be, you know, whatever. But the family members and friends just, you know, they may not be interested in, you know, a person's transformation in their attitudes, you know, transformation into like, hey, I'm a different person now. I can't go back to the old ways, you know, and that could throw a lot of family members. It could just throw a lot of people like, I don't know who you are anymore. And the person with the near-death experience will probably say, well, good, because I don't know who I am anymore either, you know. But yeah, it takes a while, you know, to work through these difficulties with family members and friends and coworkers. And, you know, a lot of people sense, you know, have a sense of isolation from those who have not had a similar experience. Or they might fear ridicule or rejection from others. You know, they're in this like catch 22. They want to share their experiences, but with having faced a lot of fear, you know, ridicule, rejection, and so forth, they stop sharing, because unless you've had a near-death experience, and you get it, you understand it because you lived it, you know, they find it hard to share with others. And a lot of people have difficulty communicating the meaning and impact of the near-death experience, you know, or difficulty maintaining previous life roles that no longer carry the same significance. I've known people who walk away from six-figure, seven-figure salaries just because that's not them anymore. You know, they either don't want to do the corporate world, or they would rather go, you know, and help people and just live a very simplistic, basic life. Okay. And certainly, you know, difficulty reconciling limited human relationships. Okay. During, you know, with the unconditional relationships experience during the near-death experience. And by all that, I mean, it sounds very clinical, but what's going on there is that a lot of human relationships are based on conditions. You know, I'll give you a couple examples here. Like, well, if you love me, you'll do this, you know, totally conditional. Or if you say that you care, then you're going to do this. Instead of, I love you because. I love you because you take a breath. I see your value, dignity, and worth. I know your value, dignity, and worth. Versus, well, you have to prove your love to me. Okay? And a lot of people just like, again, that's not me anymore. And so a lot of people have left relationships just because of the unhealthiness or the codependency that was going on. Now, despite these near-death experiences, okay, there's also many people in the scientific community, and I don't mean to put science into a bad rap here, but a lot of people in the scientific community, you know, dispute such claims of like, okay, it's kind of hard to take that you really experience these things, saying that what a person experienced was merely the result of the brain losing oxygen and, you know, the dying brain theory that's out there. That all of the sights and sounds were the result of the brain releasing chemicals that produced such, you know, vivid experiences because the brain was dying. Or, you know, there have been people that I've met who believe that they can induce a near-death experience simply by taking certain hallucinogens or magic mushrooms or even ketamine, which, if you don't know much about ketamine, it's a horse tranquilizer, for lack of a better word, a large animal or a horse tranquilizer. I had one young man who had been experimenting with ketamine and magic mushrooms, and he said that he would take just enough ketamine whereby his respiration was brought down to the threshold of death, and he saw what he believed to be some of the characteristics of a genuine near-death experience. You know, the sights, the sounds, whatever he was hearing. And he said that he had done this several times. And so I asked him, I go, okay, how then is your life different? What has transformed you? How do you treat yourself and others after having these experiences? Well, sadly, he didn't have an answer. In fact, as far as I could see, as far as I could tell, his life was just the same as it was before. And therein lies the main difference between people who've had a genuine near-death experience and those who have had an artificial one that was manipulated by drugs, you know, and that is this life review. This is huge. The life review. And think about it. If a person has been pronounced dead after 30 seconds or a minute or something, a person sees their entire life you know, and not just see their entire life, but they hear and feel everything that has ever been done or said to them. All the good things, all the painful things, and they also see and hear and feel everything that they have done or said to others. All the good things, all the painful things that they've done to others, they feel all that all over again. And they go through this life review. And they realize that, as I would put it, we certainly live in an echo. We are so connected with one another that every thought, everything we have said, in how we treat one another, it's going to come back to us. And so we, you know, people who have had near-death experiences feel those things all over again in pretty much a blink of an eye, or however long, you know, they have been, you know, their heart stopped until they were resuscitated, let's say 30 seconds to 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, or whatever. Okay. So you see, after a person comes out of a drug-induced artificial, how they would say, a death, you know, their life goes back to normal. They still have to go to work. Nothing's changed. Their attitudes haven't changed or anything because they haven't had that life review. And after a person has had a genuine near-death experience as a result of death, they return, even though they struggle with difficulties and they struggle with trying to integrate everything now, they return never to be the same again. There is a total life change. Well, I hope that in this hour, which has kind of flown by, but I hope in this hour, you know, some light has been shed on your understanding of near-death experiences. Perhaps we can talk a little bit more about this, or if you would like to shoot me an email or even share your story with me, I would love to chat with you some other time and just to see how you're doing and to know your story and you know, how you are going about integrating what you've seen and heard, how you integrate that now into your life and how your life is completely different. So I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, thank you for spending this hour with me. I certainly appreciate it. So in the meantime, everybody be safe. Everybody be happy out there. And I will talk to everybody once again in 2 weeks. So take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.